This program is brought to you by Haymarket Books as part of the Socialism 2023 program. You can hear more recordings from the conference by subscribing to the Socialism Conference podcast feed. Many video recordings are also available at socialismconference.org. If you enjoy these recordings, you should join us for Socialism 2024, which will be held in Chicago next Labor Day weekend, August 30th through September 2nd. It's never too early to make a plan with your organization and your friends to come to the Socialism Conference.
Aaron, you'll go first, so go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks, comrades. And I want to thank the comrades from Left Voice for opening up what I hope is a productive space at the conference for the discussion and debate. While the debate generally is framed as one about how revolutionaries relate to reformist organizations, and I'm going to obviously reach these issues, there are a series of related points I want to make to frame the discussion. We should emphasize, and maybe this is obvious, but as a strategic debate, that means that there are goals we share in common. What we are debating is how we get there. So the two groups agree about a number of things, some of which include that the system of capitalism is not going to be overthrown by simply using the machinery of the existing capitalist state. The revolutionary breakthroughs internationally will be an absolute necessity to overcome the power of capital and to begin to truly construct a socialist society. This is not going to happen gradually through reforms, one through the profoundly undemocratic systems of governance, which are the norm in our capitalist democracies internationally. And the revolutionary breakthroughs require revolutionary organization. And while I think that any revolutionary process that leads to a socialist transformation is almost certainly going to require revolutionary organizations, plural, when we talk about the Revolutionary Party, what we're talking about is the vehicle for the leading layer, the so-called vanguard layer of fighters, militants of the working class, and communities of the oppressed, who will lead the fight for working class self-emancipation, and to paraphrase Marx and Engels, to construct a real movement that abolishes the present state of things. I'll come back to the issue of the working class vanguard and the revolutionary process, but it is important to state up front these points of agreement. The debate here, and honestly always, often, is how we are fighting to achieve these ends. To talk about how we get there requires a brutally honest assessment of where we are now. And despite the comforts of this conference in this room, in the U.S., in a country of 330 million people, the number of people who share this starting point that I just laid out, and which motivates this debate, is minuscule. Very generously, we might say, and I'm just pulling this number out, that there are maybe 5,000 comrades in the U.S. who share this perspective of revolutionary Marxism and are somewhat organized or somewhat politically active in organizations and movements. And admittedly, again, I'm making up this number, but even if you multiply that number by 10, we're talking about, you know, 0.02% of the U.S. population and some tiny percentage of the U.S. working class. In sum, we are tiny. This is not meant to be disheartening, but it's meant to situate where we're starting from today. Of even greater significance is the question of the current state of the leading layer of the working class and the oppressed, the so-called vanguard. And this question is not only one of size, but one of consciousness and confidence. The British revolutionary socialist Duncan Hallis, as early as 1971, in an essay entitled Towards a Revolutionary Party, wrote, "The events of the last 40 years, pointing back to the 1930s, isolated the revolutionary socialist tradition from the working classes of the West. The first problem is to reintegrate them. In human terms, an organized layer of thousands of workers, by hand and by brain, firmly rooted amongst their fellow workers, and with a shared consciousness of the necessity for socialism and the way to achieve it has to be created or it has to be recreated. For such a layer existed in the 20s in Britain and internationally. Its disintegration, initially by Stalinism and then by the complex interaction of Stalinism, fascism, and neo-reformism, reduced the authentic socialist tradition in the advanced capitalist countries to the status of a fringe belief. As it reemerges from the status, old disputes take on a new life." Following Hallis and other Marxist thinkers like Hal Draper and Dave McNally, In 2020, in the lead editorial launching the Tempest Collective's website, we wrote, "The socialist movement in this country has not always been an outside negligible force. For decades of the last century, it was an integral part of working class communities, politics, and struggle. It was the force which built the labor movement, which later helped sustain and support civil rights struggles, which ensured that the ruling class concessions of the New Deal era had to be made, and which opposed decades of bipartisan imperial policies. It was a relentless internationalism and principled opposition to all forms of oppression that made these and other victories possible. The coerced separation of our movement from our class is a wound from the middle of the last century, yet it is a live wound which makes itself broadly felt in our organizing and our personal lives. We are reminded of this wound as long as we can remember, every time we are forced to pledge allegiance to the imperial flag in our classrooms and in our union halls. We will not win lasting reforms, let alone the defeat of capitalism, until this damage is repaired, fully repaired. This, then, is the framework for us from which we enter this debate and undergirds how we understand our project, how we need to think about building organization, and whether and how we relate to broader reformist forces. The roots of this debate began with a polemical piece from Left Voice comrade Nathaniel Flacken in December 2020, entitled "Broad Left Parties Are a Dead End," and surprisingly, at least for us at the time, in Tempest, subtitled "A Debate with Tempest." Flacken pretty radically misrepresents our position by way of seemingly arguing that revolutionaries should not participate in broader left formations. I encourage comrades to go back and read both Flacken's original piece and Andy Cernatinger's response on behalf of Tempest on January 5th of 2023. Whether purposefully or not, it does not really matter. This reads not like a strategic debate about DSA or Syriza or Podemos or other experiences on the international left, but a principled argument that revolutionary socialists should not be part of broader left formations. I'll say something more in a minute about DSA and leave the longer assessments of Syriza, Podemos, Brazilian Workers' Party, or the Argentine FIDU, etc., to the discussion. But there are three mistakes I want to point at before returning to the DSA question. First, Flacken misrepresents or fudges Tempest's position on the broad parties. As we have argued elsewhere and as we put in practice in DSA, consistent with almost the entire history of the revolutionary Marxism going back to the days of Comrade Karl and Friedrich, but especially relevant to the present circumstances mentioned above, are in small numbers and the relative strength of the vanguard. We will work with forces to our right in movements, in electoral formations, and even in the same organization, when and where that makes sense, so long as that work is in the service of the broader struggle for socialist emancipation. The decisions of when and where that makes sense is always a strategic decision, based on specific and concrete assessments of the state of the movement, the forces involved, etc. Yet we believe and strongly defend the idea and practice of revolutionaries maintaining our own organization in whatever form, and our own methods of presenting explicitly revolutionary ideas, our perspectives, our strategies in this work. In misrepresenting this position, Flacken is engaged in a rhetorical trick, using a caricature of an opponent's position simply to assert your own position. Jamaican-born British Marxist Stuart Hall, writing about the Stalinist milieu in the 1980s, in an essay that's worth reading called "For a Marxism Without Guarantees," wrote, "Frequently what is so disabling about the work of some Marxist writers is that you know what is going to be said at the end before the investigation has begun, that the questions are phony, that such writers are functioning on a closed terrain." Third, Flacken runs through the experience of revolutionaries in a variety of reformist organizations, including Syriza in Greece, Podemos in Spain, DSA in the U.S., while counterposing the Argentine experience in the Workers' Left Front, the FIT, as a strategic alternative. Again, I'll come back to DSA, but Flacken specifically points to the end of the political process and dynamic in which these reformist leaderships of these organizations inevitably pursue reformist paths and fail to meet the demands proposed by revolutionaries. Shocking. Flacken seems to conclude that the fact of the defeats proves the strategic premise, proves the mistake of participating in these formations. Here, there's an incredibly important lesson for Marxists that many have pointed out. The fights that we're engaged in for revolutionary socialist transformation is actually one consistently marked by a series of defeats and lessons from those defeats that can only be learned in the concrete reality of those processes. Those defeats will continue until such a time as we succeed. So we should not be surprised by those defeats, and we should not define our efforts and our understanding based solely on the fact of those defeats. Understand there's much to criticize and learn from all those experiences, but they need to be understood in their specificity. With regards to DSA, I'm going to quote from Comrade Natalia Tillum's piece from July of this year, entitled "The Blushes Off the Rose." What was significant about the rise in membership in DSA was not purely numerical. Rather, it presented a particular window of political opportunity in which millions of people were in search of a break with politics as usual. Tempest maintains that it is correct for revolutionaries to be part of broader organization while those windows exist. The whole point of politics and organization is to put them to work and make an impact. Of course, having a clear and core set of politics is necessary to build around in any revolutionary organization. But these politics can be strengthened and can convince previously unswayed activists when they are applied in the course of struggle and discussion. Tempest members maintain that participating in DSA and trying to take advantage of the opportunities that existed for the left was the right thing to do. This remains the right orientation given the weakness of the revolutionary left and the obstacles of the U.S. two-party system. But part of that orientation means understanding that those spaces are only windows of opportunity. Like all questions of organizational form and orientation, these are not questions of principle, but of concrete political moments. New political moments provide new possibilities. Revolutionaries have the chance to make our politics more broadly heard, understood, and implemented, but only if we remain open and ready to bring our politics into the broader spaces. There are two related points about political perspectives and organizational form that should be made here. First, to restate a point that Comrade Luis Miners made with some of you yesterday in another context. Central to the Tempest Project and our approach is taking very seriously the crisis of the revolutionary left of the last generation. In country after country since the global economic crisis of 2008, the organizations of the revolutionary left have failed and often collapsed, not in the face of defeat and retreat. Let me repeat, the failure is not in the face of defeat and retreat. In fact, many survived and thrived in the period of downturn, in the period of triumphant and rising neoliberalism. Rather, the failure and collapse was precisely in the face of the incredible opportunities and generational radicalization that marked the post-2008 period. These questions about how we relate to forces to our right and our perspectives on our own overall capacities and roles are essential to try to get right. Creating tiny organizations which mistake the Leninist organizational form with the need for overly high degrees of ideological uniformity and the prime imperative of organizational reproduction has proven to be not fit to purpose. That approach may have the ability to recruit in the ones and twos, it may have the ability to grow to a certain size and influence, but in their lack of flexibility and brittleness and their revolving doors of membership, they have proven incapable of meeting the moment. And let me be 100% clear here again. This is not about one organization in the United States, in one country, but about the experience of the revolutionary left internationally over the last decade or more. The second point I will make is a provocation to the whole of the Trotskyist tradition from which most of us come. In 1938, at the precipice of the Second World War, Trotsky wrote in the founding program of the Fourth International that the world political situation as a whole is chiefly characterized by the historical crisis of the leadership of the proletariat. Now, there may be an argument, though I am not necessarily convinced, that such a position made sense in 1938. However, this idea today can be poisonous to our approach, as it risks skipping over the whole question of the level and degree of disorganization and depoliticization of the working class as a whole. And again, the relatively weak state or absence of the working class vanguard in the advanced capitalist countries. When taken together with the incredibly small size of the existing revolutionary left and our limited influence, we run a risk of misreading our moment and misdefining our tasks, as simply asserting leadership over the existing or non-existing working class vanguard. To paraphrase David McNally, the Canadian socialist, a substitution occurs, in which a small organization of dozens or hundreds start to behave as if it can act as the political leadership of an organized vanguard of the class. This is the micro-party model, in which small, politically isolated groups pretend to be the organized vanguard of the working class, or perhaps in waiting for some vanguard to come. This confusion or substitution creates a fundamentally false perspective that exaggerates what the small group is and deceives the small group as to what its tasks ought to be. Let me state parenthetically, this is not an argument against small groups. We are all very small and we should be organizing ourselves. We need revolutionary organization. The question is what we do, how we conceive of our tasks, and how we organize. So I'll conclude on the point of what our tasks are at the moment and what I think defines the Tempest Collective. This is taken from our last convention in 2021. We're expecting to have another convention early next year, in 2024. And this entails a posture of non-sectarianism appropriate to our size and modesty, not about our goals or our militancy, but about the gap between the small number of revolutionaries and our tasks, and the recognition that in terms of the existing revolutionary left, there is not now a basis for getting everyone in a room together to talk about founding a new organization.
Comer.
Thank you. Though there is likely space, there not only is likely, there is absolutely space for joint work on abortion rights, the environment, labor solidarity, etc. We believe in that work, we see that work, and we will pursue that work. And we look forward to pursuing that work with other comrades and other organizations. Ultimately, we think there are five critical tasks that combine these two essential things. We do need to educate and cohere a revolutionary organization and revolutionary cadre. We need to train people. We need to train each other. We need to build revolutionary cadre. It's absolutely essential. We need to maintain and build socialist media that can sharply engage in propagandistic and agitational and organizational efforts. But we also need to embed ourselves in areas of struggle and likely struggle, maintain our flexibility to respond quickly to both evolving and episodic struggles in the context of the compound crises we are facing on this world. And we need to build and rebuild both revolutionary organizations and broader formations in which revolutionaries are strategically impacted and can, over the medium and long term, build credibility and build independent organizations of resistance within communities of the working class and the oppressed. This is about winning layers of people to both participation in the building of revolutionary organizations and participation in the emergent centers of struggle. Thanks, comrades.
Thank you, Aaron. All right, Hime, you have 18 minutes.
Hi, how are you doing? My name is Jimena, and I am a member of The Voice. I'm very happy to be here with Aaron at the Socialism Conference. And as he said, and as Sarah said before, in this panel we're debating the path to the party, revolutionaries, and reformist organizations. In a very recent article, Tempest Ashley Smith gives a comprehensive characterization of the current political situation in the US and concludes that, quote unquote, "The clock is ticking with multiple crises wrecking people's lives. The Democrats have no solution to these but facelifts that preserve the system that causes them. The Republicans also have no solution but nationalist bigotry that will make everything worse. The left must build an alternative to both, helping to lead fights for immediate reform while forging a new independent socialist party capable of leading a political and social revolution," unquote. What I want to argue here, and what I believe is the main discussion today, as like Aaron just said, is that in the current political moment, there is a subjective space for socialists to put steps forward to break a sector of the vanguard with the Democratic Party and to build a working class organization that fights for socialism, and that the call for an independent working class party with a socialist perspective cannot be exclusively propagandistic, but we must actually take steps to build it. This is strongly connected to the next question. And I think Aaron posted the same question. How can revolutionaries actually engage and win over the hearts of hundreds of young people, workers and students that are disillusioned with the progressive wing of the Democratic Party and eager to embrace more radical ideas to forge a new socialist organization? The Great Recession of 2008 inaugurated a new historical period marked by the crisis of neoliberalism. I'm not going to describe all the characteristics of this crisis. I just want to mention four main elements disrupting the imperialist world order that explain the complexity of the current historical period. One, the decline of US hegemony, increasingly challenged by other capitalist powers such as China and Russia. Two, the challenges faced by the capitalist economy, hard hit by the pandemic that hasn't recovered the rates of growth prior to 2008. Three, the new processes of class struggle in the US and in countries like France, the United Kingdom, and Peru. And four, the ongoing political crisis, or what Gramsci called the organic crisis of the bipartisan regime in America. While I'm not going to go into this, I think it's important to note that this political crisis has created changes in the ways of thinking, changes in the consciousness, and a questioning of the institutions of the bipartisan regime, both to the left and to the right. These elements of disruption mark a shift in the relationship of the masses with the two great parties of imperialist capital, the Republicans and the Democrats. The Republicans and the establishment as a whole haven't been able to contain Trump, and most importantly, Trumpism. The progressive Democrats have not managed to keep up with the hopes and dreams of the youth because they were integrated into the regime and Biden's government. These changes in the consciousness of the working class and the youth also expressed on the left in increasing numbers of young people seeing socialism as more favorable than capitalism and seeing that this system is destroying the planet. It is in a post-2008 world that a new generation of young workers and students of all races was forged in the United States. A generation exhausted by student debt and the drudgery of precarious work. A generation that stands with Amazon and UPS workers and is passionate about unions. Workers and students fed up with racism and bigotry instinctively understand, perhaps more than the left itself, that the fight against oppression, exploitation, and environmental devastation go hand in hand. Among this new labor generation, we're seeing some sectors of workers, from Starbucks to teachers and more, demanding that their unions organize for more than just bread and butter demands and take up the fight against oppression. Along with the material exhaustion of neoliberalism, the ideas of this new generation of workers and students allowed Bernie Sanders and the DSA to win the hearts of thousands of young people disillusioned with the Democratic Party. Meanwhile, the Democrats continue their role as the graveyard of social movements, but not without difficulties. Growing sectors feel that the Democrats do not represent us, and that is whole, and this whole system is rigged against working class people and people of color. At the Labor Notes conference last year, I met so many young people unionizing their workplaces who were socialists, many who were joining the DSA, whose massive, though dwindling numbers continue to highlight that there remains a socialist phenomenon, and it's expressing the almost 2,000 people at this conference. And it's clear that any illusion in Biden to stop the far right or protect our rights was a lie. Indeed, the crisis of neoliberalism makes a sector of the working class turn to Trumpism, and we are facing a very real threat of a mobilized far right in office and in the streets. So in this context, I know Aaron and I agree on the need to build our own party and on the need to fight for revolution. But there is a question of how we get there, indeed. Aaron as he said, in a 2021 article published in Tempest, describes what he calls four approaches or trends to building a revolutionary organization. The first approach is one where revolutionaries should give up building their own organization and dissolve into reformist formations. A second approach that proposes focusing on base building, divorced from politics in general, and electoral politics in particular. The third approach Aaron mentioned is one where programmatic clarity is everything, and where revolutionary organizations give more weight to that than to establishing connections with the vanguard. And this approach rejects engaging with other socialist or reformist formations since they don't have a revolutionary program. I agree that these three strategies for building a revolutionary organization are dead ends. The fourth trend, according to Aaron, would be Tempest approach, where, and I'm going to quote what he quoted before, just for sake of clarity. So the fourth approach would be a Tempest approach, where, quote unquote, we do not believe that having and projecting firm revolutionary politics is in itself sufficient to our task. We have to have a perspective that connects revolutionaries organically with emerging struggles in all of their contradictions and limits and wins people to a project. Aaron adds that this entails a posture of non-sectarianism appropriate to our size and modesty, not about our goal of our militancy, but about the gap between the small numbers of revolutionaries and our task, and the recognition that, in terms of the existing revolutionary left, there is not now a basis for getting everyone in a room together to talk about founding a new organization, though there is likely space for joint work on abortion rights, the environment, labor solidarity, and so on. Now, this is an article from 2 years ago, and I wasn't sure if Aaron and Tempest Cameras feel the same way. We agree with Tempest that without politics towards emerging struggles and emerging political formations, it is impossible to engage with the vanguard at all. But for us, following Rosa Luxemburg's position against Kautsky, revolution organizations must act in order to change the relation of forces between classes, to advance the consciousness of important sectors of the vanguard. And through this perspective, we come to a disagreement with the assessment that there is no space to discuss a revolutionary program broadly and way beyond the boundaries of our own organizations. We believe that this angle of posing the problem is incorrect because it separates the experience in the struggle for reproductive rights, unions, etc., from the task of politically organizing the vanguard. And for us, both issues go hand in hand. The problem is that intervening in the struggle for the revolutionaries implies intervening with a program, a proposal, an alternative that establishes a bridge between the most heartfelt demands of the people, the most advanced ideas of the vanguard, and their anti-capitalist thoughts towards an increasing clash with the capitalist system, the bipartisan regime, and its institutions. I believe that Tempest underestimates the potential of the vanguard, and more importantly, the potential of organizing that vanguard around a revolutionary program. For us right now, the vanguard is represented by the new phenomena within the labor movement. For example, the Starbucks workers who went on a strike during Pride Month claiming, first Pride was a riot, this Pride is a strike. Workers who are building new unions, and a new generation of workers who are recognizing that the strike is a tool to achieve their demands. Many of them are realizing the importance of political organization. This vanguard includes BLM activists fighting police brutality and who embrace anti-capitalist ideas like abolishing the police or class independence, such as the comrades of Detroit will breed here somewhere, that put forward an extraordinary fight during the BLM uprising for self-organization and class independence, and from whom we have learned a lot. It includes the sectors of the DSA that last convention put up a fight advocating for a clean break with the Democratic Party. The vanguard is also represented by many of the folks here at this conference who know the Democrats are a dead end and are seeking an alternative. Now, we're not saying that all of these people are revolutionary socialists. What we're saying is that in this political context, of capitalist decay and of changes in the way of thinking, putting forward the need to build a working class party that fights for socialism and actively inviting people to participate in building this project can be a way to engage with these new sectors with a revolutionary perspective. This cannot be done by diluting our program or by trying to appeal to the vanguard of our class on the basis of mere organizational independence from capitalist parties. A recent series of articles, the debate that Aaron was mentioning, between Tempest and Le Voice, took up the question of the role of revolutionaries in reformist organizations like Syriza in Greece or Podemos in Spain. There we argued, or the spirit that we were trying to argue, that within broad left organizations, or those that call themselves socialists but lack class independence, it is our task to build revolutionary poles, to dialogue with the members of such formations to convince them of revolutionary positions. Whether we do that within those organizations or outside of them, for us is a tactical question. What is strategical for us, what is important, is not to lose sight of the fact that our goal is to build a revolutionary organization through political clashes and common experience in class struggle. We're not saying either that the revolutionary left today can change the general relation of forces. Of course not. We're saying that the revolutionary left can and must influence the vanguard and organize it politically with its own program, and there is a basis to begin that process right now. For us, the revolutionary's program is not writ in stone, but arises from experience in class struggle and from the ideas of the vanguard in order to connect them with revolutionary conclusions. We at Le Voice, with great humility, believe me, because we know we are small and we're still learning from the complex American reality, have just published this manifesto. It is not a finished program cooked in a basement. It is the product of our experience in recent years, especially since 2016, that we want to discuss with everyone who shares the perspective that the working class needs a party of its own. But the content of what this party fights for is indispensable. With this manifesto, we hope to establish a bridge between the concerns of the vanguard and our program. For example, the fight against the far right cannot only rely on defending our basic democratic rights, but must go hand in hand with an intransigent denunciation of American democracy and its reactionary institutions such as the Supreme Court, the Senate, and the Electoral College. That must be abolished. Faced with capitalist greed, we have to sow the seeds of the need to expropriate the big capitalist, which is the only way to guarantee public health for all. Faced with environmental catastrophe, we should expropriate and nationalize industrial production in the hands of the working class so that it can be organized not to maximize profit, but to ensure the well-being of all those who inhabit this planet and to protect nature. Contrary to what the DSA leadership believe, we don't think the working class is a massive maneuver, masa de maniobra, that is supposed to focus their attention on fighting for their bread and butter demands, denying the importance of oppression, and relating to broader politics by voting for the Democratic Party. Revolutionary politics subverts that perspective to the core and seeks to advance the consciousness of the working class in order to highlight, through propaganda, agitation, political experience, and class struggle, the opposing interests of the imperialist bourgeoisie on the one hand and the working class and oppressed on the other. I am very struck by how sectors of the left create theories to separate production from social reproduction, base building from politics, exploitation from oppression, etc. It's very striking to me how we formulate theories to deny the transformative potential of the multiracial American working class that most overcomes its divisions of race, gender, and more to unify its interests and fight together against the imperialist system anchored in the exploitation and oppression of millions. We need a party that, with a common platform, fights against U.S. imperialism, unites what the racist patriarchal capitalist system has divided, and allows us to fight against racism and oppression with the firepower of the working class. I want to invite Aaron and Tempest members to unite efforts. We do not believe that we have full agreement with the left organizations to whom we're calling in our manifesto. For example, regarding the war in Ukraine, we have a fundamental disagreement with Tempest. For us, it is a proxy war between capitalist powers and is the way in which U.S. imperialism is preparing for further confrontations with Russia and China. NATO rearmament cannot be tolerated by the left, and we must openly call out NATO troops from Ukraine and Eastern Europe, while at the same time denouncing the reactionary Russian invasion of Ukraine and China's imperialist aspirations. But discussing these differences is part of establishing the foundations of the program we need in order to build a working class party that fights for socialism. Instead of remaining in the comfort zone of our organizations, we think we should open the debate amongst not just the left, but the broader vanguard around what party we need. We are enormously optimistic that from the living experience of this generation forging the pandemic and BLM lies the seeds of a new socialist organization that will throw off the yoke of the Democratic Party and find a way to the masses. Otherwise, if we don't present an alternative, it will be Trumpism that takes advantage of the crisis. We are in a preparatory moment where the conditions of the imperialist world order are disrupted. It's our task to prepare for the fights ahead and begin the discussions we
You're
need.
You're in time, comrade. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, subscribe to our podcast and to the Haymarket Books YouTube channel, where events like this one are hosted live. And don't forget to check out haymarketbooks.org.